Are you ready for an interview with creative people too? Carolina. It's Carolina Stories.
All right, giddy up. Today's guest is Mike Barnhart, the founder of Axis Fitness here in Wilmington, North Carolina. I always have fun talking to Mike. He's an incredible entrepreneur and goes through life filled with energy, optimism, and joy. Unfortunately, COVID-19 has hit the fitness industry particularly hard. But if you're in Wilmington, definitely check out Axis when they're able to open back up. It's the best gym I've been to, and hopefully you'll get a sense for the service they offer and what differentiates them in this conversation. Okay, let's dive in. So, Mike, I'm not sure I've ever met anybody with as much energy as you. Have you always been that way? Or like, what flipped the switch where you just decided to go through life energetic and optimistic?
You know, I look at my youngest son now and I realize I probably have always been this way because he certainly is. He and I are more similar than different in that sense. So, you know, I look at Kane and even Grady, my oldest. And I mean, it's constant tapping on the table. You know, even when they're talking to you, they're like bouncing off the bed. I mean, it's just like, there's a lot of energy. So I think that I've always been this way. I just fortunate in the last, you know, 15 years or so found an arena to put it in where people actually expect it versus them being like, whoa, that dude is a lot. But I think I've always kind of been this way. I've just learned how and when to let it flow.
Yeah, I love it. And when you do feel kind of depleted or run down, how do you try to recharge the batteries?
Man, believe it or not, I'm kind of an introvert by nature. So, you know, I do enjoy time by myself quite a bit. You know, I feel like I give a lot publicly and I certainly do that intentionally, but I think I actually recharge best when I check out and I'm able to kind of relax. I'm a big music guy. So being in a room with my thoughts and kind of some good music playing is kind of an opportunity for me to chill. Like I love being in my car, like I'm not gonna say the highlight of my day by any stretch. I mean, there's a lot more to it, but definitely a time that I really enjoy is at the end of a long day. I live about 10 minutes from the gym that I work at most often. And I've got about a 10 to 12 minute ride depending on traffic. And I'm in there complete silence and just really trying to kind of take that time because I get home and we have kids and all that stuff too. So yeah, man, I am actually one of those guys that is outward and open as I am with my life. Like I think I recharge best when I am able to step aside and just get a little bit of quiet and just kind of like, okay, it all makes sense.
100%. Yeah. I'm very much an introvert as well. And so it's like, I enjoy being around people, but I definitely need to kind of retreat to my own space and recharge the battery.
Yeah, definitely.
Makes a lot of sense. Like, tell me about your health and wellness journey. Have you always placed such a emphasis on kind of physical fitness and training?
You know, believe it or not, I stumbled in. I mean, I've always been active. So I grew up in a beach town. So I grew up surfing and skateboarding and I've always been very active. I played sports up until high school and I got a job and all that kind of shifted gears. But, you know, I've always been very active and I ended up hurting myself. I started working out, you know, in the college years and I ended up hurting myself. And at the time I didn't have health insurance or anything. So I learned how to rehab my own back and that I fell in love with the language. I fell in love with the system. I fell in love with, you know, the process of saying, okay, it's here, it hurts, but we can take here and it's better. And then, you know, through that process, you know, through the same process, I can, you know, I was started training my friends and I had other people working out with me and I realized that I was like, man, I feel like I have a little bit of a knack for this. I was good at getting people to kind of buy in. Like, let's go work out. And then once I started to understand direction and how to modify and progress and regress and things like that, like it all started to make sense. I was like, I could probably make money doing this. And then, you know, I looked around in some of the gyms and people that were actually making money to do it. I felt like, you know, they had a lot that they could improve on. And, you know, for me, it was just like, if this person can do it, so can I. And, you know, I just fell in love with it and I am very much an all in kind of person. So when I find something that I'm interested in or find something that I am passionate about, like I dive in, I want to know everything. I looked at, you know, the physiology of the body and I looked at the musculoskeletal system from like a physical therapist point of view. So it wasn't like, hey, let's get big. It was like, hey, how can you move better? And how is that going to translate into things that you enjoy doing? So my approach has always been a little bit different from a coaching standpoint that to me, it's never been about like, let's get as strong as we can, or you know, let's get big or, you know, whatever. Sometimes those, I don't say superficial goals, I don't know if that's fair, but some of those goals that are thrown out there a little more often, that's never really been my appeal. Mine's always been quality of life. And I just realized that if you feel your best, chances are you're going to be your best. And that's just been my whole motto, to try to pour that into other people, you know?
Oh man, I love it.
But if you get swole in the process, like, so be it, right?
Yeah, but it's so true. I mean, it's funny because I was working really long hours in my 20s, and then I hit 30 and I was like, I've always been relatively slim, but I was like, man, if I don't do something about this, things are going downhill pretty quickly. And so then I started getting into a normal workout routine, and now it's like, I can't live without it. I mean, it's like one of my favorite parts of my day. It gives me energy. And so I relate completely. What is your daily or weekly routine look like? I mean, so how many days are you working out? Do your workouts vary? What does your diet or nutrition look like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an 80-20 guy when it comes to my lifestyle, right? I've had to learn about having kids and relationships, and I, a lot like you, worked really hard early on, and I realized for me that while people can appreciate that, obviously the people that I care about most need some of that energy too. So for me, I still struggle with it quite a bit, but I'm really trying to learn balance. And so that 80-20 rule is certainly kind of how I try to live my life. And so I love waking up at 3:45 in the morning. I love being in the gym, training people at 5 a.m. Like, so, you know, my days start early. And so nutrition is a huge part of keeping my energy up, right? Like, I mean, if I was to eat a high sugar cereal for breakfast versus, you know, I'm a big shake guy just because, you know, the lifestyle is very quick. So I have a couple of shakes a day and I eat three or four times a day too. So a lot of calories get consumed, but you know, if I wasn't consuming good food, like, my energy level would certainly show that. And then, you know, ultimately, like, I do my best workouts, believe it or not, come when I jump into a group, because I'm just going to push myself. I give other people such a hard time, like, when I'm coaching, that I know when I step into a group that people are like, all right, Barnhart, like, what's up? I know how you talk to me. Like, let me give it back to you. So I love the groups, man. Like, I love working out in the groups. I mean, how I program the workouts in the facilities is very much how I like to work out. Like, I like to do some strength. I like to do a little bit of circuit training, and then I like to get my heart rate up. Like, that's kind of, you know, to me that makes sense. It's very linear. It's very logical. It taps into the metabolism in a very scientific but natural way. And so my workouts, when I'm by myself, while the intensity is probably not the same as it is in the group, the workouts look very similar to the group workouts. But my best workouts definitely come, like, if I pulled up beside you on conditioning, like, I don't talk smack anymore, because I know, like, Steve's gonna run faster than me when we hit the ground. So it's I use this saying a lot. Those who can't do teach. And so, like, when everybody gives me a hard time, like, oh, Barnhart, you could go fast, whatever, I'm like, hey, listen, man, that's why I'm a coach, right? I can push you to do it, but maybe I'm not gonna be good at it or whatever. But I try to work out at least four times a week strength wise, try to get in some good strength training workouts about four times a week. And I'll be 40 this year. So, I've definitely learned to listen to my body some days if it's not there. Like, I certainly scale back intensity. Some days if I'm feeling good, I'll go a little bit harder. But I do try to get in those four strength training workouts a week at some capacity. And then at least one, if not another 2 days of some sort of just movement. You know, like, I love surfing. I love being outside with my boys playing soccer. We got a big family. Heather and I have a blended family with 6 kids. So, I mean, there's no shortage of activity, but I feel like my body responds best with at least 3, if not 4 workouts a day. But if I strength train more than that, like, I start to feel a little banged up, you know? So I've tried to find that rhythm that works for me. So a good 3 to 4 days of strength training, another 2 to 3 days of just some, like, aerobic kind of just active activity type stuff. That seems to work really well for me. I don't feel banged up. I feel good. Like, I'm not going to be moving. My quality of movement doesn't start to break down to where I end up opening the door for an injury or something like that. So
yeah,
it's all about maintenance right now, baby. All about maintenance.
100%. I love it. And I'm so similar. It's like, I would prefer to work out in a group setting over, like, even one-on-one personal training any day, because I thrive off that kind of competitive environment. But when you are working out by yourself, how do you maintain kind of the mindset and the discipline and the willpower to kind of get through a hard workout without negotiating with yourself?
Yeah, I think I'd be less than honest saying that sometimes I don't do that, right? Like, I mean, you know, Heather, my girl, she has this thing. She was like, some days I don't feel like walking in, but I always give it at least 12 minutes. And then if I say, hey, listen, after 12 minutes, I can't get into it, my time's going to be better spent doing something else, then I'll do it. But typically speaking, if you do that, if you commit to that first, like, let me get in here and just get moving, like, you're going to create some sort of momentum and you're going to complete a workout that would, that is certainly better than not, right? And I think for me, a lot of it is, I just believe in it so much. And I do speak about it so much, and I'm in it and immersed in it so much that it's just, it's somewhat ingrained. And I would rather, and there are some people that would disagree with this, but I would rather go through the motions and get a 60, 70% workout than miss a workout that day. You know what I mean? Because the reality is most people aren't going to look forward to every workout every time, but it's the ones that you end up doing that you didn't think that you wanted to do that can sometimes be the game changer of a day. I just believe in it. You know, I literally feel like exercise is medicine and I got to take my medicine, man.
Are you familiar with David Goggins?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Heck yeah. He's like the toughest guy in the world, right? Like he holds so many world records, pull-ups and all that stuff, but yeah, an amazing guy.
Yeah. Former Navy SEAL. And now he's been into like the ultra marathons and the pull-ups and whatnot. But
crazy backstory, right? Crazy backstory.
Yeah. Wild. But yeah. So he has a book, Can't Hurt Me. I don't know if you've read it.
I haven't read it, but I do know what you're speaking about.
Yeah. And so there's so many takeaways that I just love, but like he talks about this 40% rule, right? Like when you think you're just tapped out, you're only 40% done. You still got like 60% left in the tank. And then yeah. He also has this philosophy called, like he calls it taking souls, where if you're in a fight, you just have to be on the attack. And like the enemy has to know that you're going to be relentless and you're not going to stop. And it's even funny. It's like, I think about that a lot. Like if I'm working out and I love that competitive fire. And if you're next to me on a run or whatnot, I mean, oftentimes you've taken my soul, but it's like, I love having that, that mentality.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that, you know, that's one of the things that separates a good coach from a coach that's ready to even try to say that I want to be a great coach is like, you know how to tap into that person and you know how to get them to understand that, like, I know you're tired, but you're not fatigued. There's a very real difference between being tired and being fatigued, right? Fatigue is a very real scientific state of being. Tired is a mental thing. And if you can learn to push through being tired, you realize there's a big window between tired and fatigued, you know? And that's what I think that, you know, I certainly want to be my crowning achievement is that I can, within a matter of a few minutes of watching somebody train, I can somehow get them to realize that, like, listen, you're tired, but you're not fatigued. Like, we can keep going. And that's a really important part of my coaching style and probably what people love and hate about me all at the same time. Like, I can't believe you said that to me, but thank you. I appreciate it. Got me there, you know?
100%. So what sports did you play growing up?
Big soccer mostly. But my main thing was surfing. So my mom was a pro surfer. And so I was on the beach from my earliest memories were surfing. So started surfing really early, got into soccer and really enjoyed playing soccer, played a little bit, you know, all through middle school, kind of competitive and then into high school. And then I realized if I wanted a car, I needed to get a job. So around, you know, 15, like it all kind of stopped. And I hopefully I can be in a position one day because my oldest son, Grady, is super competitive in a healthy way, I think, but he's definitely driven and soccer is kind of his thing right now. So I just want to support that. So it's fun to kind of see him have some opportunities that I didn't have. So love playing soccer, but surfing has been the thing that has always just really been in my blood. And I've done that continuously throughout my life. And that's definitely what, you know, that is my church, so to speak. That's what I look forward to, how I train. It's certainly all kind of transfers back to, I want to make sure that it's going to help me in what I enjoy doing most, which is, you know, living my life for my kids, but also my sport of choice now is still just continuing to get in the water.
Yeah, very cool. What are some of the characteristics that really resonate with you in regards to surfing?
You know, I'm a big midline stability guy, right? So like, I love movements and movement patterns that really get the entire body working together as a kinetic chain, because that's how we're designed, right? So for me, it's anything like, you know, the fundamentals of, you know, just deadlifting and squatting properly, like that to me is about as fantastic as it gets to developing that full body power and speed and just that synergistic effect of producing force. So I love those traditional movements, and you know, you see those in almost every workout. We'll have one of those staple movements because I believe in them that much. But also, like, you know, I love the stability stuff to where, you know, you are doing those unilateral, or you're breaking up left and right side of the body, so that way you can kind of see, okay, left hip's tight, right quad's tight, you know, something's going on in this shoulder or that shoulder. So I think that there's really nothing revolutionary about how people train. I mean, there's been the errors of BOSU balls and stability balls and all that stuff. And while I do think there's definitely some good things that come from that, like when it comes to strength training is about producing energy, and you can't do that on an unstable surface. So I do a lot of strength training. And then if I want to do balanced stability stuff, then I do that also. But very seldom do you try to mix strength and balance, because they're not synonymous, right? Like, you can't be strong if you're unstable, right? Like, you have to be stable to be strong, and then you have to be unstable to get better at stability. So I like to break up training into the elements of kind of how they are pure, because I feel like that's the way they're meant to be, right? So everything from the deadlifts and the squats for strength. I love burpee complexes, because just that pop-up pattern is obviously something that transfers very well. And then most sports, surfing included, are unilateral in nature. So you're using your left and right side of your body independently of one another. So think just like running's unilateral, and we do that in all sports. So is surfing. You're putting pressure on the back foot or the front foot, or you're leaning to the heel side or toe side of the board or whatever. And so breaking up the body and seeing how your left side and your right side move and correcting those imbalances is huge. I think that's something that a lot of people undervalue.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I don't surf, but I imagine it's pretty interesting, because it's a sport where you don't get a lot of reps, right? Like, you're waiting for waves. And so aside from trying to break it down into the individual blocks, like you talked about, how do you think about improvement when you're only in a wave for maybe a minute or two each time you go out?
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes it so special, I think, right? Like, it is like any student of a sport, it comes down to study, right? And so in the easiest way to understand, or the easiest way to get better at what you're doing, whatever the sport is understanding, being able to see yourself do it. So obviously growing up, you know, as an 80s baby, there wasn't a ton of people out there shooting videos. So we never really got a chance to see ourselves surf through maybe still images and some video as I was getting a little bit older. But I think where a lot of the advantages now to any sport is being able to study film, like being able to see yourself doing it, because typically we don't actually look out there to the world as we potentially do in your mind. Like, I know for some reason in my mind, I'm like, I'm killing it. God, that was awesome. I'm like, well, okay, maybe it wasn't so good. But, you know, I think that when it comes to a sport like surfing, like, conditioning is so important, because it does matter. Like, hey, there's waves this weekend. Like, I want to surf as much as I can. And if you're deconditioned, or you're, you know, you just don't have the strength to surf more than an hour or so at a time, that minimizes those opportunities for reps, right? So it's really about always being season ready, so to speak. So that way when we do have swell, we're looking at the wave charts and the swell charts, and like, hey, we got waves coming, you're ready to surf for 3 or 4 hours. So you can get as many reps in as you can, because those windows are small and infrequent.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's transition now to Axis. I mean, have you always been entrepreneurial? Like, how did you decide you wanted to start your own concept?
You know what? I think I have, man. You know, I've always been a little bit of a hustler, so to speak. Like, I always understood the value of money. My family, I never went without, but like, I definitely didn't grow up in a privileged household, but I lived in a beach town. So like, it's, you know, very much so, like, I was surrounded by money, but my family maybe wasn't the wealthiest. So I always understood that dynamic of economics and, you know, if I want this, then I have to do this, and I'm not going to get it from anybody else, so I have to do it. So I've always definitely had drive. I think entrepreneurialism kind of came in as I realized that if you work hard, you can get really good at something. If you get really good at something, you can have your own thing. And so that was just kind of a linear progression for me. And so, you know, I got to a point where I was like, you know, I think that I can do this well enough that I can do my own. So I started as a trainer in a gym working for a national fitness company. And, you know, within 3 to 5 months, I hated it. I was like, this stinks. Like, you know, I know they're selling you this, I'm getting paid this, the people aren't loyal to the company, like, the relationship they have is with me. And don't get me wrong, I learned a ton by being a part of that. But I also, at a very early age, understood the value of relationships. And so I realized that I was like, hey, listen, if I were to leave tomorrow and told these people, hey, I'm training at this location now, chances are they would probably come to train with me because, again, the relationship is what they're paying for. Obviously, they're paying for the result. They're paying for the accountability and all the other things that come with hiring a coach. But more than anything, you develop a relationship and they trust you. And so that's a hard thing to find. So if they trust you, they're going to go where you are to continue to get the service you offer because they trust you. So it just, I started as a trainer. Then I had an opportunity to open my own company inside of a gym. So I did that. And then after, a couple years of doing that, I opened my first brick and mortar, had a small studio, grew that to two locations, got recruited by a manufacturing company called Life Fitness and Hammer Strength. They're a big global manufacturer and they sell equipment to colleges and to gyms and to all that. They recruited me. So I sold Topps Athletics, which was the first brand that I opened up here in Wilmington, sold it to a business partner I had at the time and moved to Florida. And that was when things I started to understand scale a little bit. Like when I was at Topps Athletics, it was like, hey, I'm going to run this place and I want to max it out. And then when I went to Florida and I started selling equipment to gyms and to trainers and to, all franchises and all this other stuff, like I really started to understand there's a whole world of opportunity in the fitness space. And I knew what I had always been good at. And I realized that what I was good at from the coaching and creating a training department inside of gyms, a lot of other people would struggle with that. So when I got to Florida, how I would earn business, basically, I had competitors in my arena, as I would say, yeah, you can buy a treadmill and a chest press from any of us, but if I work with your coaching team and get you guys a blueprint on how you can run a training department based around small groups, would that be a value? And they're like, yeah, where do I sign for your treadmills? And so after doing that for a year, I was like, man, I don't really care about treadmills. Like I'm selling treadmills. I'm getting beat up for, $200 and $300 and $400 a treadmill. And I was like, I don't even care about this guy's treadmill. Like I want to see you sprint on it. Like I don't even want to sell it to you. So I realized that I was like, hey, I got to travel the country and I saw a lot of really cool business models and I knew what I was good at and I was helping other people do it inside of their locations. And I even spoke in front of the First Coast YMCAs, which is the Jacksonville YMCA Association, a huge association. I met with their executive team and how we could shape their PT department. And it was then that I was like, man, I need to do this on my own. There's franchises out there and there's business models out there. There's really nothing proprietary about it. They're all struggling to understand training. I know what it takes to grab 6,000-8,000 square feet and fill it full of equipment, but like I've got the training piece figured out. So I said, I'm moving back to North Carolina and I'm just going to try to open up as many locations as I can. And Lumina Station was our first and it was kind of our proof of concept. And now our training model is somewhat understood. So now we're opening up bigger locations with a gym and our training model inside of it.
Yeah, I love it. And so the training model, did you get inspiration from, like, I guess it's evolved over the many years, but like, what did you draw inspiration from? Any classes or any combination of classes?
Yeah, definitely. I love when I would go and I would be in different cities and different states, I would always pop in. I would try to find, what's hot in that location. And you start to see a lot of reoccurring themes, right? Like, there's a lot of boot camp style, high intensity models out there, call it whatever you will, right? There's those CrossFit strength training models out there, which are great, call it what it is. And then there's those, traditional models where people pay $30 and they come in, they use your equipment and they come twice a month. And, that's what they do. That's their jam, right? And all those things have been proven. And so all of them have a level of success in their life. So what I tried to do was figure out what makes really successful models sticky. Like, what is it that really makes them successful? And then at the same time, I had to be true to myself. Like, what is it I'm going to enjoy, right? So I think that for me, if I had to, and I hope I don't cheapen what we have here, but to draw context, I would say what we have here is a mix between, a strength training class that you would go to, a barbell club kind of class that you would go to. We certainly believe in that modality. A circuit training, high intensity boot camp style class, that flavor is definitely in here. And then, some of those cardio based classes that are, really hot too, that people would do, whether it be spin or the Orange Theories of the world or whatever, where it's focused on really an aerobic workout. So there's that strong flavor in there as well. And then we just leverage technology in a way through the heart rate monitor device, where it just becomes kind of an immersive experience where people, they're kind of in control of their own exertion, right? They're kind of in control of their own intensity. So that way they don't feel like they have to do 10 reps at 100 pounds or whatever the situation is. Like, oh, all I really want you to do is I want you to be in this zone, and you're getting the same response running a 10-minute mile as this person is running a 6-minute mile, because we're asking for you to be at 85% of your max heart rate. Like, I don't care what that intensity means for you. I don't care about the metrics around that. I just care about that one metric, right? You know, so I just kind of put a lot of different things I was exposed to together and put a bow around it, and then just kind of gave it my flavor and, you know, kind of created something a little bit unique.
Very cool. Yeah. And so the fitness industry is obviously very crowded, and you kind of touched on a lot of the different options. And earlier, I think you talked about building relationships and building trust. I mean, what is it that you think differentiates Axis from the crowded competitive landscape?
I mean, I can only answer that in what I hope separates Axis from the landscape. There are some great coaches out there. There are some great models out there, but I do think that we have the best team out there. I feel like, you know, we're not doing anything revolutionary in here, right? Like, a squat is a squat, a push-up's a push-up, a pull-up's a pull-up, a spin bike, a rower, a dumbbell, all that stuff's the same. So what we try to do differently is that we leverage technology in a way that makes the experience consistent, right? So you can have a level of consistency each time you're in here. And then ultimately, it's really about how we make people feel when they come in here. Like, it's truly about, if somebody walks in here and then they leave after the workout, if they were ever say, like, I don't even know if that had an impact on my day, like, that would make me just sick to my stomach, right? Like, so, and I'm, some days we do better than others at that, but I think the biggest thing is, like, when people walk out of here, there's just kind of like a, like, I did it, or I feel better, or, you know, I'm in a better mood, or, you know, that made a positive impact on my day, and it has changed the trajectory of my day in one way or another, and for the benefit.
100%. Yeah, I completely agree. And it's like, once you get that feeling, it's addictive, right? Like, you want to keep going back. And especially in today's world where we're all glued to our phones, we're kind of comparing our lives to the highlight reels of somebody else's life on social media. It's like, to get that community, it's pretty powerful. But how do you think about scaling that? Because nobody is going to bring more energy than you do. No one's going to care more than you do. I mean, and so the brand is very much aligned with you and your personality. And so as you grow locations and class times, like, how do you scale it?
Yeah, I think that the hardest part of any business is going to be the people side of it, right? I mean, especially when we're such a belly-to-belly business. I mean, it's huge getting people to understand the culture of what's made us successful. And I think that what that is for me, I'm very protective of the experience, and maybe almost too much, but it's like what I know, you know what I mean? And so I do definitely have a very high standard. So it really comes down to finding the right people and then putting the right people in the right seats on the bus. And I feel like that's something I'm learning. I'd never thought this was going to be the hardest part of my business is the people that I pull on the team. I didn't think that I thought getting money would be hard. I thought getting locations would be tough. All that stuff has happened much easier than finding the right people. You know, it really comes down for me at this point, and by no means so I have it figured out, is that the personality of a person is almost more important to me at this point than how much they know about metabolic disruption, right? Like, it's almost like, hey, obviously you have to understand biomechanics. You have to understand exercise. Like, I'm not going to pull, you know, my waitress or waiter all into the gym because you have a great personality. But it's almost like, I can teach skill, but I cannot teach you to care. I can't teach you to be empathetic. I can't teach you to want to be here. You know what I mean? And so it's almost like I'm at a point now where I hire based on personality, and the rest of the stuff, I feel like there's going to be an on-ramp to anyway, because we have our own style, like how we coach, how we cue, how we communicate is all ours. It's part of kind of our DNA in the business. So we have to teach that to a degree anyway. So give me someone who cares and give me someone who wants to be here, and I can feel like I can convert them into a coach other people want to be around. So whereas before, like, let's just say years 1 and 2, it was like, I need these great coaches that understand movement and all that, which is awesome. But like, nobody, you know, it's the old adage, nobody cares about what you know until they know that you care. And, you know, that's been the big role reversal that I've had to understand is just like, it really comes down to, if Steve's going to come in here for a workout and he's going to probably take the 1 hour of his day that he has to do something for himself and he's going to give it to us, like, if we don't value that as a business, then chances are Steve's going to find someone or some other location that will. So get people to understand that how they make money is attached to how they make other people feel. And if they can get down with that, like, cool, let's roll. If we can't, then that's okay. There's other places out there that are probably a better fit.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But and then when you find that great personality that is a really good fit, how do you try to keep them over a very long period of time?
Yeah, you know, right now it's been very much just casting the vision, you know. Because I've kind of come through the rank and file of working in gyms and then trying to open studios and, you know, working inside training companies and all that, like, I understand the opportunities that are out there for someone who's trying to get into this world or for someone who's been in this world even a little while. And so for me, it's very much like, I want to find the right people and I want to give them a better opportunity than they would have anywhere else. And it's funny, the people on my team that have come from other locations, like, dude, this is awesome. The people on my team that have come fresh off the street or this is their first job in fitness, they never last long because I think they feel like the grass has always been a little bit greener. And then, you know, I end up seeing them 6-8 months later and like kind of like, that was kind of a good thing, you know? And I'm like, but you don't know what you don't know. And so I get it, you know, like I'm very much I just want to see people be successful. I am a firm believer. I'm going to get what I want by helping enough other people get what they want. So if I can create an opportunity that people believe in and I can kind of give them as clearly as possible a vision and a sight line of how we're going to get there, then people can rally behind that, you know?
Yeah. And then, so different gyms obviously have very different cultures. And I think it's a mistake generally to try to be all things to everybody. And so in my opinion, Axis has kind of a culture of definitely working hard, a little bit of like friendly competition where you want to be pushed. So how do you try to balance expanding your core customer base, like welcoming people at all fitness levels while still catering to your core customer base?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one that we're grappling with right now as we, you know, as we're trying to open up a new location in downtown. And I think that, you know, we have to be true to what we are. And we tried, even when we opened up our second location, was a location that we purchased that had, you know, bar and Pilates and it had some other stuff in there. And we toyed with that for a little bit, even got into the yoga realm, but we want to be the best strength and conditioning company that we can be. Like, that's who we are. At the end of the day, if something goes wrong and a coach can't make it, like, I can't teach bar, like, they're doing burpees. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, we're not, I don't know. You know what I mean? So like, for me, it became very clear after about a year of trying to kind of deviate a little bit and just trying to grab people that it just was watering down what we really are. And what we really are, I think, is special. So we wanted to be the best at that. So we have to really rely now on breaking the stigma through getting people to understand what we do. So we're even in the process of redoing our website, because in our website, it's because we've added locations, not quickly, but over the last couple of years, we've added locations. It became, you know, the homepage of our website became very much location specific. And so if I was to go to the website objectively, I'm like, okay, so what is Axis? Like, they got this location, they got these locations, but what the hell do they do, you know? And so now it's like, hey, listen, this is what we are. This is what we do really well. Here's the science behind what we do. These are the populations we serve. What location makes most sense geographically? And for us, that's the way it's got to be. It's got to be like, hey, listen, you know, you want to see body composition changes? Awesome. Guess what? You're going to go in a group and you're going to keep your heart rates between here and here. And then in 1 month, you're going to kind of step it up and show them how we on-ramp it. And then if it's, hey, listen, your corrective exercise, you know, you've got a banged up hip, shoulders, knee, lower back, whatever. Like, let's work one-on-one here for the first, you know, 2 months. And then let's on-ramp you back into the groups. If it's, hey, it's athletic performance for me. You know what? Like, the group setting is going to be good for you as is, right? So, you know, the cool thing about the fundamentals is that they never change. And all we do is we bring the fundamentals and we get people to understand how the fundamentals are going to help them. Like, we have people like, hey, I want to be a better golfer. Go get a golf pro. You know what I mean? But what I can certainly do is strengthen the tissue that's going to make you a more efficient swing and you're going to hit the ball farther. You know what I mean? We have people like, I want to run faster. Like, you will end up running faster through what we do, but I'm not a running coach. Like, if you need a running coach, you need a running coach. And it's, you know, it's the same thing with some of the athletes coming in, like, hey, I'm a baseball player. That's awesome, dude. Well, I show you what we're going to do. We're going to strengthen up your shoulder complex. So when you're throwing a ball, one of the most, you know, high velocity movements in all of sports, like it's not your shoulder, your humerus is not going to come out of the shoulder complex, right? So trying to get people to understand that we run the fundamentals and the fundamentals are going to transfer into everything that you do. It's up to you to work at the capacity that is comfortable for where you are that day. And so it's just, we have to educate people better.
Yep. And you have three locations in Wilmington, as you mentioned currently, and I think you're opening a fourth downtown. What are the long-term ambitions for Axis? Do you plan to expand statewide, nationally? 10 years from now, where do you see the brand?
Man, you know, so yeah, I always feel somewhat flighty saying this, but I literally moved back from Florida saying, I want to open as many as I can. I don't even know what that means, but I've definitely started with the end in mind from day one. So in my mind, everything's built on replication. Everything's been built on, you know, how can we scale this? Everything's built on, well, if somebody in Raleigh does this, what would it look like? And that process is starting to get more and more clear because it's such a broad thing for me to wrap my mind around because I didn't understand all the concepts as clearly as I thought I did, right? So for me, what I would want to do is I want to be the best business model in our market first. And then from there, I would love to be able to expand into other markets with people that are similar to me, right? Like I don't think I would ever go the corporate route and try to manage a bunch of locations because I know that I'm not a great manager. But also I think that because the locations are always going to be so coach specific that I would much rather have some guy who has sunk his own money into a location than some manager that I've had tried to hire and recruit, because the person that has their own money into something, the person that believes in it so much, they're willing to invest, you know, a chunk of their savings into this to open up a location, is going to outwork the person who is like, hey, listen, dude, it's 5 o'clock. Like, I'm sorry, man, I'm 9 to 5. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that in any negative way towards a management team. I just mean that what we do is it is demanding. It's not a 9 to 5 job and you have to love it. And the only way that you can really love it is by believing in it. And if you believe in it enough to invest your own money, then you kind of, you know, you're all in.
Yep, absolutely. And so COVID-19 has obviously hit the fitness industry particularly hard. Like, what are some of the steps you've taken to try to weather the storm and kind of survive from a business perspective?
For better or worse, man, we completely shut down and just started giving away everything that we could. Like we stopped billing when the businesses closed, and instead of charging for virtual classes, like to me, the value is very different, right? Like I couldn't in good faith charge somebody what I've been charging them in the gym to work out at their house in front of a computer screen. Like it didn't make sense for me. And I didn't want to develop a whole new, you know, revenue arm and try to sell people on why they should do this. So for me, it was very simple. It was just right now is a time to give back. Let's make this very easy. So it was a lot of uncertainty around money and people's jobs and all that. So what we've decided to do is we just took a hard stance and stop all billing and give as much as we can every day and just try to keep people engaged so they have one less thing to worry about, not one more thing to worry about. And hopefully it's you know, it's kind of a pay it forward karma thing. Like hopefully that works out well for us. There's other people that are probably still billing their people and maybe they come out ahead because they have months of revenue where we didn't. But ultimately I just believe in what we do in a way that if we could just stay in front of people and even potentially you share with your buddy who may go somewhere else or who's on the fence about coming to Axis, and we build, even if it is this virtual relationship, that when things do open back up and we are able to kind of start servicing our members and our clients again, then there's just such a real sense of gratitude that it's not a money thing anymore. Like, it's just like, hey, this is why I'm here. Like you guys show up. You know, you show up every day. It's not about the dollar necessarily. It's really about, like, I care about the people that walk in here because ultimately everything I have is because of the people that believe in what we do, you know? So in times of trouble, like, let's take money off the table and let me pour back in to other people. So just seemed like the right thing to do.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, those long-term win-win relationships, I think, go a long way, and they're traits of many successful businesses. And I think that notion of reciprocity does tend to work out over a long period of time.
Got my fingers crossed, Steve. I feel good about it.
Awesome. Shifting gears a little bit, but are there any like athletes or people or other entrepreneurs that you kind of respect or admire?
Oh gosh. Yeah, man, I am a student of success, right? I mean, like I love to study people that have done a really good job. You know, locally, I have people that I certainly lean on quite a bit for direction and mentorship. And without them, you know, I got one guy in particular, when I moved back from Florida, I was like, hey man, in order for me to make this happen, I need X amount of dollars. And he gave it to me right away. You know what I mean? And so those are the kind of going back a little bit, talking about the relationships and how important they are. And when people believe in you, what that means. And so locally, there are definitely some entrepreneurs and business people that have, you know, have always looked out for me in that sense. Cause I, you know, I've been doing this a long time. So I mean, I'll be 40. So, you know, I really started in this, I was in my 20s. And so I've had these relationships now for quite some time. And from an athletic standpoint, you know, I'll keep it all local. I mean, I really do. My cup gets filled from the people that come in here every day. I mean, there's certainly people on the national stage and, you know, even more on a celebrity figure stage that I look up to for what they've overcome. But I truly get my cup filled up by the people that come in here every day, because this is another cool part of what we do, is most of the people that come in here have a level of success in their life. And it's because they have a level of drive in their life, which is why they're attracted to these kind of workouts. So yeah, there is, man, the list is too long. I mean, I get so much inspiration from so many people that I don't even know where to begin to kind of narrow that down.
Yep. Completely. Let's shift to Wilmington. So you mentioned you grew up in a beach town. What brought you to Wilmington originally?
Yeah. So I'm from Emerald Isle, which isn't far from here. So it's just north of here, probably 45 miles. And I grew up surfing contests. So I would come down here, and then ultimately the university brought me down here. So after I graduated, moved down here for the college years, and really just fell in, you know, haven't left since. I mean, I've definitely left and come back, but this has always felt like home since, you know, 99 when I got down here.
Yeah, it's a special place here. I grew up in New York and then spent time in California. Never really felt like I found home until we moved here. So it's a cool place that I think is a hidden gem. Not many people know about it. Surprisingly.
Yeah, no, it's great. Now, how long have you guys been here?
A little over a year. So we moved January 2019.
Okay. From Cali or New York?
We were in Charlotte for a couple of years. Okay. And before that, I was in San Francisco. Lindsay was in L.A., but I mean, it's like we wanted to be near a beach and we would go to LA, but it's just so expensive. And so here you get all the benefits without the cost of living drawbacks.
Yeah, no, agreed. Yeah, no, it's definitely home. Like I said, I've gotten to travel some as well and some very cool places out there, but nothing ever feels quite like Wilmington to me. So
yeah, let's talk about travel. Any favorite place you've been to?
Man, I've seen most of, you know, a lot of the U.S., but I haven't traveled internationally a ton. I traveled actually out of the country for my first time, I guess, 2 years ago, and went to El Salvador. We went on a surf trip, and it was amazing. I mean, there's a couple of things in my life that, you know, after they happen, you just can't look at life the same. And, you know, one was certainly seeing my boys be born. Like, that's a game changer. But another one is traveling to a third world country, because it just makes you so grateful for, you know, all that we have. You know, it makes you realize, like, listen, our worst days are still so much better than some people have it. So it was sad to be there, but it also, like, what I pulled from it was like, man, like, you know, you come back, I came back just super amped and charged that, you know, that I have all that I have, and, you know, that I've been able to accomplish some things, because ultimately, you know, I've seen bad days and these aren't it, you know what I mean? So, I would love to, I definitely have the travel bug. But one of the, I'm not going to say drawbacks, but definitely one of the things of being a entrepreneur in the infancy of a business is I don't have a ton of leisure time yet or a ton of leisure money, but that's the goal, right? Like, I mean, I do work hard, so one day I can enjoy it. So soon, man, soon, hopefully I can answer that question again in a couple of years and have a little more to add.
Love it. And let's talk about that balance. I mean, you're balancing being an entrepreneur, a dad, a partner. So obviously extremely busy. And you mentioned you wake up at 3:45 each day. Like, how do you think about sleep in that mix of priorities?
I demand it. I mean, like, I am annoyingly loyal to a 9 p.m. hard stop. Like, I don't care if it's Saturday night and we're hanging out at a dinner party. Like, at 8:30, I'm looking for a bed. Like, there's not a lot of deviation there. So you know, I love rest. Rest is a big part of the equation for me. So yeah, I go to bed early and I wake up early, and that's the way I like it. I've been on that schedule for a long, long time, and I do enjoy it. You know, just like I'm sure other people enjoy being up later at night and being able to sleep in. Like, I don't know if that's a DNA thing or a train thing or what, but yeah, I am a huge believer in getting enough rest. And again, because it just affects my energy, and I know what level that people appreciate, you know what I mean? And not appreciate, but tend to expect, especially in this setting. And if I don't deliver that, I'm kind of hard on myself, you know, because I do see myself as someone that has an opportunity and the ability to change somebody's day. So if I don't take that serious, then I'm just another coach doing an okay job, you know?
Yeah, totally. And sleep is one of those things where I've changed my mind on probably over the past 5 or 10 years. I used to think it was this zero sum game, right? Like, the more hours I'm awake, the more productive I am. And if I'm sleeping, I'm not working. But yeah, Now it's like, if I don't get 7, 8 hours or more of sleep each night, it's like my creativity is off. I'm just not a fun person to be around generally, like either to myself or to Lindsay or anybody else. So
yeah, no, agreed. And I think that, you know, for me, when I get a good night's rest, when you talk about creativity, that is first couple hours in the morning are like, they're gold to me. They are just so important. And I love to be able to harness that. And that's where I get a lot of my inspiration from, is those first couple hours in the morning. Cause if I have gotten enough rest and I'm feeling well, like, I am firing, and that's, you know, I value that time.
Very cool. Yeah. I want to shift to parenting. So Lindsay and I are expecting a baby boy this August. It's our first
August
kid.
August what?
August 17th.
Man. So Grady's the 9th. I'm the 11th, and Kane's the 25th. So
wow. Oh, yeah. That's very cool. Well, so what have you learned about being a dad over the years?
Oh man. It is a gift, man. It is a gift. It probably the most enjoyably frustrated you'll ever be in your life, especially as they get old enough to start talking back. But man, there is not a day that goes by that that I'm just not lit up when I think about kids, man. I mean, it's incredible. I think that, you know, it definitely just adds to my drive and why I do what I do. It makes me think back to when I was a kid and how certain things happened and like how maybe I would handle that differently as a parent. And it just makes me want to be a better person all the way around. And I drop the ball sometimes, but certainly at the root of being a parent is for me the foundational reason to be better. And that's just like a something I hope my boys see. Like my boys, like I pull them into work with me, you know, like when they're not at school, for instance, right now, like I take them to work with me and they go in kids care and they're like, "Daddy, can I help you?" Like I get them to help pick things up. Like I want them to be a part of what I do every day. Cause I want them, when they look back, I want them to say, "Hey, Dad worked really hard." And that's the reason that we're going to, you know, we have the things that we have. And, you know, I want to run that fine balance where I want my kids to have the things I didn't have, but I want to make sure that they're not ungrateful. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, it just changes the lens at which I view how I behave, because I want them, if they're going to end up mimicking me anyway, I want to make sure they mimic things that are positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also mentioned that you have a blended family with Heather. How has that process been?
It's hugely rewarding. You know, I think that, you know, going through divorce and separation with kids is tough, right? Like, especially, you know, she has two of her kids are a little bit older than Grady and Kane. So they were very attached to the family unit. So where Grady and Kane were a little bit younger, Grady more so than Kane wasn't as attached, but he certainly was more affected by the separation of he and me and his mom than Kane was. Kane was so young. So the dynamic there is, it's kind of one of healing, because they have something that unites them in a way too. Like they use each other for sounding boards. And typically, like if they're frustrated with how something's going in the house, like say we're having to discipline one of them because for whatever reason, like they find solace in one another at those times. And then there's other times that they would probably like to throw each other down the steps, right? But for the most part, like it makes it a lot easier because they have more similarities than differences because of how we've kind of been meshed together. And I hope Heather and I certainly try to put a lot of effort into what that relationship looks like and the context that we always put around that relationship. And, you know, she works really hard to get along well with Grady and Kane's mom. And I definitely put effort into getting along really well with Heather's kid's father. And, you know, there's no bad people in the mix, right? It's a really tough situation. Good people are just trying to make the most of a really tough situation. So I think that ultimately, as hard as it is now, I do hope, again, it's one of those situations where when the people look back, when the kids look back and Heather and I look back, like they say, it was tough, but they handled it really well and we all learned something from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And with COVID-19, you've obviously been spending a ton of time with the kids. I mean, how has it been these past couple of months? Are there any activities or homeschooling tips that have been working well?
Oh, dude, now that's a sore subject, man. Like, I could cry. No, that's tough. I mean, you know, for all along, I thought that it was the teachers that were the problem. Turns out my son is not perfect. I don't know if you could feel me on that. But so it's tough. I mean, you know, there's six kids in all, and they're all, you know, 12 years and younger, you know what I mean? And so it's, there's just a lot of moving parts when you're trying to homeschool that many kids. And some days are certainly better than others, but, you know, teachers are a special breed of people. You know, they have the patience for it. They probably go into that field because of their love for it. Like, I'm not a teacher, you know what I mean? And so that's been very tough, and it's made me value and appreciate teachers that much more. And then to top it off, we're a big beach family. So with the beaches being closed, it's like, what are we doing? So the kids are like, we're looking for pools, we're looking for sprinklers in yards. I mean, like, what are we doing out here? So it's been tough. We're all just kind of getting through it the best way that we can. But I do think that we'll miss some of the things, right? Like, one of the things that's been really cool is I've had to teach Grady math. And Grady's a pretty sharp kid, but he struggles on concepts he's unfamiliar with, and he's very impatient too. So, like, I see him become impatient with me, but I would have never seen him learn how to do math. I would have never seen him struggle to understand conceptually math. And we're doing multiplication. So it's just kind of like, eh. And I'm trying to explain it to him, and I'm probably doing a poor job. He's trying to learn it, but I am not his teacher. So the arena in which he's used to learning is very different, but we get through it. We navigate it. And I've learned some really cool things about how he stores information that I would have never been exposed to. You know what I mean? And like, I'll value that. Like, I will communicate with him differently moving forward when we are doing something new together, because I know how he needs to digest this for it to make sense quickly, you know? So little things like that have been really cool. But all in all, this has been a huge challenge, homeschooling definitely being one of them. And, you know, I think everybody's just doing the best they can with the current circumstances.
Yeah. And then earlier we talked about kind of drive and competitive fire and the value of hard work. How do you think about instilling that in your kids without being so militant that they kind of end up resenting you?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a fine balance, right? Like, you know, for me, I definitely want them to be independent, and I want them to bump their head a little bit, because I do feel like success can be a little bit of a lousy teacher. And I don't want to be, you know, a helicopter parent that is just so protective that all of a sudden they graduate high school or college and they're exposed to so much so quickly. They're like, I don't really know how to deal with all this, right? So I am not risk adverse personally. And my boys are kind of risk takers too, by the way they jump off of objects that are probably too high, things like that. So I try to walk a fine line where it's like, hey, listen, there's freedom, but then there's also that, you know, that ability where you're going to have to trust me if I ask you to pull back. And then there's time for you to be on your tablet or your iPad. And there's time where you're going to help me mow the grass or pull weeds in the yard, and you're going to be miserable the whole time, but you're going to look back and you're going to realize, like, okay, like, this is part of life. You know, you have to do the things you don't want to do sometimes, because that's real, you know? And real is what we use, is a word we use a lot in our house. And when Grady, for instance, I'll keep using him as an example, when he's trying to manipulate a little bit, I'm like, that's something like, Grady, you're not being real right now. Like, tell me what you want. And slowly he starts to break down and he tells me exactly what's going on, and he'll call me out too. I'm trying to think of an example where you know, where I'm kind of like, you know, Dad, I want to go to, you know, Flip and Fly. And I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of raining and, you know, maybe, you know, whatever. And he's like, Dad, that's, you're not being real. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't want to go to Flip and Fly right now. Like, can you give me an hour and we'll go, whatever. So like, I just want them to feel very comfortable being honest. And if they can do that, then I think that they can perceive honesty and they can give honesty. And that is just a very natural way to kind of cut through the noise that surrounds so many people that have a hard time calling a spade a spade.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. And something I'm going to try to emulate. Well, I think it's also a perfect place to start to wrap up. Mike, thank you so much for all the time. This was a blast. And thanks for being you, man. Access has been incredible for me personally. I mean, every time I walk out of there, I'm in an incredible mood and I'm just filled with energy. So can't wait for those doors to open back up. I always like to finish these interviews with a lightweight question. So Mike, what's your favorite restaurant in Wilmington?
Ooh, favorite restaurant in Wilmington. I gotta say, man, it's Brasserie. That has been a go-to ever since we opened it up here at Lumina. That's mm-hmm. been a place of many team meetings and Friday afternoon and Friday evening kind of group sessions. And it'll always have a pretty special place in my heart, man. So yeah, Lumina Station has been a really good spot for me, man. And Brasserie has probably been the most consistent food and service that I've ever experienced.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I'll be back soon with some more episodes in the weeks ahead. As always, you can reach me on Twitter @svafier or on LinkedIn. Have a great week.